Innovation is not just about technology, it's about process. It's about how we interact with our users. And I think focusing on understanding our users and their mission and then bringing the right technologies to them is the best way to focus in on innovation.
Welcome to Mindset, a Leidos podcast. I'm your host, Bridget Bell.
And I'm your host, Megan Good. Join us as we talk with pioneers in science, engineering, and technology to understand their creative mindset and share their stories of innovation. This week, we caught up with Doug Jones to talk all things digital modernization, including mobile, apps, cloud, SecDevOps, and more. As the director of Leidos' Digital Modernization Accelerator, he knows innovation.
And he had some interesting thoughts on that word, innovation, and what it truly means. We also got to hear about his mindset on technology and how it exists to enable the mission, not the other way around.
We made sure to ask him about what tools and technologies he thinks will be obsolete with the digital revolution and what resistance he's seeing to these changes.
Let's dive in. Today, we're speaking with Doug Jones, director of Leidos' Digital Modernization Accelerator. Doug has nearly 20 years of experience in government digital modernization. Welcome, Doug. Would you like to give a brief introduction and tell us a little bit about yourself?
Sure. So I'm director of our Digital Modernization Accelerator. And a little bit about my background, I started off focused on mission-critical systems, coming out and doing large-scale software systems in the federal government, and then moved into doing enterprise IT and even did a little bit of a brief sojourn in terms of running a 24/7 cyber operations floor for DHS. I've got a broad breadth of experience over 20 years of really helping transform our government customers from both of a security perspective, a software perspective, and an IT perspective.
So with that, Doug, over the course of your career, you've certainly had a lot of work with technology and different kinds of technology over the last 20 years that we've seen, you know, really invade our personal and professional lives. Now, I'm curious, what first got you interested in working in this field?
I kind of had a unique introduction to this field. I majored in materials engineering and science. And coming out of college, I graduated right around the dot-com bubble burst. So the semiconductor market, which was my focus area, materials, was the first area to crash out of that. But while I was in college, I helped run NC State's network where I went to college. And so I picked up networking and IT modernization. And then when I moved up to DC for original job that then fell through, I sort of pivoted into that focus area. And then 9/11 happened and really wanted to focus in on giving back to our country and helping support. And how do we leverage technology to enable our mission and protect our nation's individuals, as well as help empower and protect the rest of the world?
So it sounds like a lot of your career has been focused on applying technology to help government agencies or the broader world make better decisions and really invest in technology. Can you tell us how that fits into digital modernization and how you define modernization?
We really focus on defining digital modernization in three main ways. First is it's all about the mission and the user. So when you think about digital modernization, the entire reason it exists is enabling a mission, making our users more productive or improving their capabilities for them to deliver a mission or a business outcome. Second, that it's all about data and really about leveraging that data to inform those decisions. And then it's about things such as software and automation to be able to get speed and improved resiliency and capability. So how do we leverage the technology to deliver that automation, deliver that capability so that we can focus on that mission piece so that we can deliver cheaper, faster, more secure, and more resilient?
So what specific areas are we focusing on?
We break it into seven main categories, starting with the classic end user support pieces. So think of your call centers, your service catalog, those areas, and taking a user-centric approach to that support and making sure that we can still enable supporting those users in a more effective and in a transformative way. Then we look at the digital workplace, and that's how do you collaborate? What is your laptops, your Skype or your Slack, and supporting that workforce so they can deliver that value in that digital workplace? And then we look at mobility, really a transformative technology in terms of now we have a highly mobile workforce. How do we enable that mobility? How do we bring in mobile devices to deliver mission value, enable folks to make those informed decisions when they're on the run? And then the other technologies are really more around your back-end support areas, starting with cloud. Again, a major transformative technology from a cloud perspective that we're really seeing change how we do business and how we deliver IT and software and technology services. Then moving into DevOps. And DevOps is more about a culture and a mindset change. It's about delivering value and speed and getting those constant feedback loops so that we're delivering the right thing and empowering that for how we deliver software and IT capabilities to focus on making sure that we're delivering those outcomes and we're getting that constant feedback and hitting to the right things to empower those mission elements. Then we move into application modernization, which is an area I'm passionate about because I've sort of lived through that early part of my career. It modernizes applications. When we started with mainframes, went to client servers, then web-enabled, and we keep modernizing applications so that we can take advantage of technology and leverage those capabilities to really empower those mission users so they can focus on making those informed decisions or enabling our citizens. And then lastly, it's about the data center and the network modernization. So how are we modernizing all the technology in the data centers, everything from your servers and your compute and your storage to your networks and things such as software-defined networking, and how we optimize the actual processing of the data and these applications to deliver value to our customers.
Wow, that is a huge spectrum of capabilities and services. And so in all of these components, across all these areas, which ones are you seeing really getting the most traction and attention from our customers, from the federal government?
Well, definitely cloud. I mean, the government's had a cloud-first strategy for a while, and it's taken a while to take hold, but it's really, the momentum's there now in terms of cloud adoption. So that's a major one that we're just seeing a tremendous focus on, the continued leveraging of cloud, and I'll say even a more intelligent leveraging of the cloud, moving more towards how do you take advantage of the new capabilities to give that speed and innovation. Then looking at DevOps is another major one in terms of, again, driving that speed, time to value, which I think is an absolute critical piece. And then, you know, lastly is probably in the mobility space, as we're starting to see a major change in adoption profiles in terms of the amount of folks that are leveraging their mobile devices across the spectrum to start performing their work.
So in this conversation so far, I mean, you've talked a lot about the word change, right? So where are you seeing the most transformation occurring in the next 5 years as these kinds of technologies get implemented more broadly, you know, such as SDN and cloud and different mobility first kind of measures? Where do you see that big source of transformation happening?
I think it's definitely in the mobility space. With LTE coming out, we finally saw the speed and lack of latency to enable people to really, on our personal side, leverage mobile phones to do a tremendous amount of activity on them. But really in the enterprise space, and more so in the federal government space, today we're only using mobile phones really for productivity. It's for email, it's for basic activities, and really phone calls. And now with LTE being adopted, you know, out there, and now with 5G coming, which, you know, increased performance and even less latency, we're really going to see a major adoption. As I mentioned earlier, we've already seen, you know, applications being modernized from mainframe to client server to internet. I anticipate we're going to start seeing a next wave of modernization where it's going to be mobile ready. So how do we make sure our mission apps and our mission data at the edge is there so that we can actually make those informed decisions at the edge, leveraging our mobile devices? So we're going to start seeing mission data on the mobile devices. But when you think about modernizing applications for mobility, you have to do something differently. And we've seen this in the commercial space, you know, in our personal lives and our personal phones and the applications on it, is that you don't do every function that you have in an application today on your mobile device. You do things that are, how can I make quick decisions? What am I doing from a time slicing perspective? Are there other activities that are workflows or decision points I make that I'm going to be doing on a small screen with potentially intermittent communication? And it's going to be really impactful when you start thinking about how you leverage that to empower our nation's users, right? So whether it's healthcare and, you know, making sure that citizens have the data on their healthcare and their history at their fingertips to be able to share with their doctors immediately, or whether you're talking about Customs and Border Protection agents boarding ships in our nation's ports to inspect them and having that data at the edge that may be intermittent communication sometimes because you could be in remote areas, but how do you then cache it and make sure the data is available in a way that they can be effective? And that's where I think you're going to see a change. There's some architectural changes, some ways you want to display data differently that lend themselves to the small screen and how you're really empowering decision-making real time with data. And that's where I think we're going to see this major change over the next 3 to 5 years from how we leverage technology at the edge with our mobile devices.
So I'm going to switch gears a little bit and ask you that in your role as the director of our Digital Modernization Accelerator, you're really focused on innovations and finding that next innovation and identifying that. So how do you stay on the leading edge of what's coming and what's really innovative?
Innovative. That's an interesting word, and a lot of people use it for a lot of different things. Obviously, I read a lot. I stay up a lot on what's going on in technology in the commercial world, in the enterprise world, in the government space. But what I really think is what is important is to think about innovation is about problem solving. It's about how do you use technology to solve our users' problems? Because it's all about the mission and the users. When I think about what we do, and I think about IT, we have to always remember that the only reason why IT or digital modernization or technology exists is to empower our users to do the mission. That's it. We don't exist for a technology to bring interesting technologies in. We exist to solve problems so that our users can do what they're really good at, whether that's making hard medical decisions in terms of how the best way to treat a cancer patient, right? Or it's, you know, empowering counterterrorism analysts to determine, you know, how do we determine if this person's a bad guy and we can let them into, our borders through TSA or through immigration services, or, you know, empowering our soldiers on the, you know, field of battle. So technology is there to enable them to do their job better, to keep them safer, or to push the bounds of research and science, or to heal people. So when I think about innovation, it's about how do we apply technology to solve those problems? So to me, it's all about listening and understanding what are their problems, what are our users trying to accomplish, and then bringing the art of the possible, what technology can actually do, because they don't always understand the art of the possible. They don't understand how we could leverage technology out there to solve their problems. So I start thinking about innovation. It's, you know, where do we bring even commercial technologies in to solve their problems? Or innovation from how we deliver capabilities. If you look at a lot of the innovation that's come about in the commercial space, it's even about how we do customer service, how we deliver our support to our users. Think about things like Apple's Genius Bar, where people walk up with mobile phones and there's not a central desk and they check you out and they check you in. Or if you think about, you know, how you interact with Amazon.com and how they support you. So I think we've seen a change in innovation is not just about technology. It's about process. It's about how we interact with our users. And I think focusing on understanding our users and their mission and then bringing the right technologies to them is the best way to focus in on innovation. An example of where we've done that, bringing commercial technologies into a customer space, was when we were supporting our NASA Jet Propulsion Laboratory customer in California. They were struggling with assembling satellites. So they go into a clean room and they're assembling, like, you know, Mars rover, or they're assembling things that they're doing space exploration with. And when they run into a problem, they have to leave the clean room, go get on a teleconference with people that are all over the country that built the different sensors or capabilities inside that space vehicle, and then work through how they go fix it, and then go back and they're looking at schematics, and then they go back in the clean room. They have to get decontaminated from a dust perspective, put on the bunny suit, and then go in there and try to troubleshoot it. We said, hey, maybe we could do something different to try to help them. So we focused on bringing a bunch of technologies into the clean room, leveraging wireless battery power. So we had a VTC screen running on battery that we would charge when they're not using it, connected over wireless. And then they had iPhones and iPads where they could literally just show them up inside an apparatus where they weren't getting something to connect correctly, or they couldn't get installed, or it wasn't fitting correctly, on a live video conference with the engineers that had built the original pieces. And so they could troubleshoot it much faster, and they were saving hours of productivity by leveraging these commercial technologies in a different way so they didn't have to go in and out and they could have a real-time conversation using video to show what the problem was so the engineers on the other side could help them troubleshoot and solve that problem. So it's how we leverage technology that maybe is existing today, commercial off the shelf, we use it in our personal lives, but applying it through that lens of our mission problems and what our users are trying to accomplish to then make their lives easier.
Those are some really cool examples, especially the JPL one that blows my mind of the commercial technology aspect and how you're applying that in a much more regulated kind of environment. But one thing I always think when I talk with you, Doug, your energy about innovation is so contagious. And we've worked together for a couple of years now, but never on a daily basis. And to take this question a step further, I'm just curious what part of your creative process you use and or how you actually are applying that lens. You know, what's something that you do every day and you say, oh, I've read about this really interesting technology. How do you work that into a solution that you're coming up with?
I love my job. I think I have one of the best jobs in the world. I get to help solve some of the hardest problems that our country has and empower a bunch of our engineers to solve those problems. But when I think about your question, part of it is it's an art. It's not a science. And it begins with listening. Listening to your customer, listening to the users, and understanding where their frustrations are. Because again, they don't always understand the potential for technology and where technology or some other capability could help them. So listen and understand their frustrations and then look for where you could connect dots. It's all about that sort of observation, that listening, looking for where someone solved a problem uniquely in another way, and then you could bring it into that space. You know, I mentioned earlier, the Apple Genius Bar. How would you leverage technologies like that to then improve the user experience in a hospital? How would you leverage technologies like that to improve the user experience and our ability to impact folks in a general IT setting? Inside a large customer building, right? So it's looking at where have I seen people use unique ways of solving problems. So it really is about listening to your customer and seeing where they're frustrated and watching how they do their job. It's about thinking about what are unique ways that are out there and then being very observant to what's going on in the world, even outside of where you think your industry is. I mean, that could be, looking at a building and how they designed the way they come in and the way technology, may greet you in the elevator or in the building. And then how would you maybe apply those things to another use case? How do you interact with an online vendor and how does that support? I mean, I'll use an example. One of my favorite interactions online was I was having problems with my Fitbit. I went on to get support because it was in the first year warranty. And, I went on their line, I filled out a ticket and said, hey, I'm having trouble with my Fitbit. And I filled out some information about it, hit submit. I pretty much almost immediately got a text from Fitbit saying, John from Fitbit's going to call you in 5 to 7 minutes. And he did. And he called me and he'd already looked at my ticket. He'd already looked at the errors that we're having with my syncing to the server and then over to my phone. And he knew exactly what the issue is by the time he called me. And he basically asked me 3 questions, including what color band did I want and confirming the address to send my new Fitbit to since it was under warranty. So thinking about it wasn't some new technology that brought that to bear. It was how do you understand your user actions? How do you understand the data you have access to? And then how can you use that to make the decisions faster that give you a better experience from a user, as well as potentially save you money and cost from a provider and how you support it. So that innovation, that problem solving piece, that's where I think is the value we bring. It's about that mission lens, that business lens, that user lens, and then looking around the world of how do I look for technology or process improvements to just, enable those users.
And I love those examples because like you keep saying, the technology is there to empower the mission and the users, not the other way around. And so I think that what you're talking through is really providing valuable solutions. But I have to ask, I imagine you've been on rocky projects that maybe haven't gone so smoothly in the past. How do you rebuild your passion? What advice do you give to others to overcome those struggles if they're in one of those not so successful projects?
It's funny. I've spent some definite times on some red programs and some rocky recoveries, especially early in my career. That was sort of my expertise. The first 10 years of my career was mostly in red program recovery on major government systems, for the FBI, for Homeland Security, and a couple other ones. And when I look back at those, that's where I learned the most. And so I think that it's okay to do those. And we shouldn't be afraid of struggles or failures. That's where you learn. And then that's why I'm a better engineer and problem solver now than I was then. Those things are what shape us. And we should not be afraid of them and not be afraid to talk about them, because I don't want my customers to go through the same struggles. So the lessons I learn, I want to pass on to other engineers and to my customers so that we can, enable them to avoid those pieces. I think it's really important to look back at that and not be ashamed of it. And not, I'm not saying we celebrate struggles, but we view them from what they are, which is how do you learn how to do things better? And I've used those examples of then making a decision so I could be ahead of the next time and not have those problems again. And so keeping that passion alive, I think it's really important to understand what you learn from them, but then turn around and leverage those things to then solve problems better in the future and keep that passion going of passing the torch of lessons learned on to all the other engineers or customers that you interact with on every additional engagement.
And that actually gets to another question that I had for you. So one of my favorite ideas that you shared over the past is about the vending machine for IT gear. What are some of those interesting solutions that you guys have been noodling about, maybe whiteboarding or connecting the dots on right now, that you think are going to make a big break within some of our customer sets?
That was always one of our favorite innovations we were working on. When you start thinking about how much time we spend trying to just buy basic IT assets, whether it's time, it's delay, it's process. I like to think about even me as a user, how do I want IT to be delivered? And when I start thinking about, I had to go to somebody with a purchase card to go get a new headset or to go get an approved thumb drive. And that could take, several days to a week. And sometimes you need that stuff immediately because something just broke. So the idea that we could give a vending machine that was stocked with headsets, iPhone cases, approved USB drives to make sure they're the correct ones from a security perspective, or other low dollar value assets that you need on a regular basis, and then integrate that into your badging system so you can badge it and they can determine if you've got the ability to buy those things and in whatever budget you have, and then track it back and bill back to your department that you were, you procured those pieces. And give that sort of Best Buy feel inside our existing IT so people can get what they need, again, so they can focus on doing their job. So I think that was a piece of it. We've also been looking at a locker concept. So when you start thinking about, my laptop screen broke at 6 o'clock at night, but I'm going to be on travel the next day. How do I get that support? So can we have especially in remote sites or other places, can we have a locker with return to service machines already in it that I can push your image to and your configuration and then send you a pin. So you just go get that out of a locker. So I can give you that support. Even if I am 500 miles away, you can get the laptop you need to go continue and go to your travels or wherever you're going to a customer site, or going to perform a mission right after that. So I think that sort of thought process of put yourself in the user's shoes. How do you make it easy so they can get the service so they can get back up and running? One of the things I think sometimes people forget about is IT used to be all about just sort of back-end services, but now it is fundamental to how we do our job. We use IT to do our job every day. Everything we do is empowered by some sort of technology. It's not a back office productivity aid anymore. It is the way we deliver our mission, the way we impact our business. So it's got to be there. And we're relying on it being there because we always have it. We always have access to the IT. So we as IT providers need to think about how do we put that mission criticality into our IT and into our processes for how we support that IT. So that's a couple of different ones. When you start thinking about some of the other ones we're looking at is can you do things simple, again, from that user viewpoint that said, you locked yourself out of your computer. I've done that, locked my password out, coming back from a vacation and forgot about it. But then I don't remember what the phone number is to go, call the service desk to unlock my password. Well, we monitor when people lock themselves out from a security perspective because we're worried about, people trying to hack into accounts. could we just automate sending a text message to you saying, hey, we noticed you locked yourself out. Here's the link to the mobile-friendly password reset site so you can go reset your password immediately. And if you didn't lock yourself out, here's a link to the security organization to report that we have a potential issue. So there's impactful ways we could do this by leveraging technologies, but again, thinking it through the lens of the user, thinking through the lens of the mission, and how do we bring these types of capabilities to our users?
I love those examples, the vending machine, the locker, and then making it easy when you do lock yourself out or need some help. Because like we've talked about, it's using technology to solve problems and making it sure people can focus on their jobs and on their missions and that they're not tripping over technology or it's not getting in the way. So I think Megan definitely said it best when she said your passion for your job is contagious. You can tell how much you enjoy it and how you can then live out that innovation. So I want to go back to those various components of digital modernization that you listed earlier. So those seven, is there one that stands out that you're most excited about?
I think it would be DevOps, because DevOps is really about delivering value at speed. And it's really that transformation of not just technology, but leveraging process and even culture change so that we can be able to deliver technologies in all the other areas. So the other six areas I mentioned, how do we deliver them faster and make sure we're delivering the right thing? So if you think about DevOps, one is about how do you increase speed? So if you think about like a process flow from left to right, then it's how do I make sure I'm delivering the right thing fast? So you want to get constant feedback loops. And then eventually at the point where we are constantly delivering and giving feedback, so we're in a constant change mode. Because if you start thinking about it, technology changes, the demands of what we need out in our workforce, whether it's on the, you know, from an adversary in cyberspace, whether it's from, you know, on the battlefield, whether it's in healthcare, the needs of what we deliver change so fast. If we can start doing a better job of delivering at speed capabilities and be able to react to those changing demands faster, then we can keep up with technology. We can have technology move at the speed of mission. And that's why DevOps gets me really excited, because it starts instrumenting our processes, our technology, and how we deliver capabilities in a way that we can enable that speed of mission.
Okay, so I'm going to take that question one step further, that you're part of the Digital Modernization Accelerator. So there's three concepts built into that. There's everything going digital, everything modernizing, and then accelerating, it's actually being delivered. So which of those three would you say is the priority area for your efforts today?
I definitely have to say accelerator. If you think about the other ones, they change, right? So we went from analog to digital, and even the definition of digital continues to evolve and change. So that one changes a lot. And then modernization is just changing. But really, it's about acceleration. How do we accelerate the time to value? How do we accelerate from flash to bang, from idea to value in a mission, to improve safety, to improve mission outcomes, to improve citizen services? So I think it's all about the acceleration, because we need to enable us to keep up with the speed of mission. As I mentioned earlier, the demands on our customers are changing so fast, but we haven't been able to keep up in terms of how we deliver technology and capabilities. And that's where I think the acceleration piece is the most critical.
So with that, here's my somewhat cheeky question. Is there a future for paper or printers, pencils? What kinds of technologies do you think are going to change so much over the next couple of years that all of this digital modernization will replace?
It's funny. We do think about things like that. I mean, the printer piece is been brought up a number of times with customers in terms of, hey, you know, this is a long-term contract. We want to sunset printers by some point in the middle of the contract. And we start thinking about it, there's a long tail, because you have to think about generations, right? When you talk about generations and their comfort level, they have different comfort levels. I mean, I'll say part of the digital generation. I came up that analog to digital transformation and change, but even I can look back and, you know, watch the YouTube videos where you see teens struggling with a rotary phone, right? And I remember rotary phone at my grandmother's house. And so those things exist for a long period of time. And you've got to be prepared for those. But when we start thinking about those areas, you know, one area I think about is the classic sort of call center service desk. You know, that is an area that that we see a lot in the government space, but we've started to see a road out in the commercial space. When I try to call Fitbit or contact Fitbit, they don't make the phone number piece easy. They want you to interact through their digital platform much more so. It's more scalable. It's more secure. You get more of a repetitive service. They get more data on what they're doing so they can make better decisions and route the ticket to the right people. So we're starting to see more of that. So I think you're going to see, it's not going to go away, but you're going to see less of a focus in that and more of a focus on leveraging digital platforms to support. Another example, when I start thinking about it, is, you know, I have an 11-year-old daughter. She's a sixth grader. And, you know, she's got a Chromebook at school where they, you know, they work on different projects. And, you know, I was at home with her and she's working some homework. And I mentioned something about, you know, maybe this summer we should work on a typing course. Because I remember back when I was in middle school, we learned typing. And she goes, I don't need typing. She presses her speech to text button and dictates into her Chromebook. And it got me thinking is, are QWERTY keyboards going away? Are people going to be dictating or using alternative forms to interact with their IT systems? And the answer is yeah, probably. If you look at over time where we're going, it may take a while, but that's one of those technologies that may start going away. But then when you start thinking about there's the foldable screens that have been announced, you know, Samsung and a number of other ones have announced them. And, you know, is that going to really change sort of the pay-per-view and paper going away? And I think you're going to see, again, a less of emphasis. I think it will start going away, but that's going to be a 15 plus year journey as we start looking at how generations adopt things. But it is fascinating when you look at things like, I would have never thought of the keyboard going away when I'm talking to my daughter. And that was just sort of a shock. So there are technologies that will really evolve in the near future based upon, you know, the advances that we have.
And I think you're so right that it is that generational change, because like you mentioned, the YouTube videos of the teenagers who can't figure out the rotary phones, or then as we see our children grow up with your daughter and the voice to text, or I know I see my kids, they'll come up to any type of monitor or TV and expect it to be a touch screen. So I can completely see a keyboard going away as people can just talk to it and move things around on their screen. So with all of these changes being inevitable, and even if it is 5, 15, however many years out, do you see a lot of resistance to these changes in technologies? So as the technologies of the past become more obsolete, are a lot of people resisting that change?
I find resistance happens when we don't do it right. When we lead with technology, what we need to do is lead with mission, lead with the user, leverage that lens, as I mentioned earlier. When I sit there and I engage users and I understand what they're trying to accomplish or what their struggles are, and then bring technology and help them understand how technology can help them solve their problem, they get excited about it. They want the technology then. So when we lead with empowering them, making their job easier, making it easier for them to make the hard decisions, to have the right data at their fingertips, that's when we do well. And that's when I find resistance sort of melts away. But when we lead with technology and we don't engage, and also I'll add, when we don't give them regular feedback. So if we do that engagement once, then they may still have resistance, but we do it on that regular basis, that constant feedback loop, like I mentioned earlier on the DevOps piece, that's when you see them energized and they're excited about the technology. I mean, there's always going to be a subset that are resistant to change. Sometimes they just don't want change. They like the way their job is today, but 90% get excited about it when we show the ability it's going to have for them to focus on doing their job. You know, I'll use an example early in my career. One of those problem programs from customs, I had, you know, we had rolled out something for processing every truck at the border into the U.S. And we had some issues in our initial pilot site. And we had agents from the field come back to our site here in D.C. and tell us about how we were actually making it harder for them to do their job because we had misunderstood what they were trying to do and how they adopted certain technologies. So it was taking them longer to process because they were having to go from mouse to keyboard, instead of being able to like type very quickly and shortcut around. And what we wanted them to do was spend less time typing and more time listening and talking to the person trying to cross the border to understand if there were any, you know, if the person was nervous or any tells that the person is trying to smuggle stuff into the country. But we had you know, made it so they were focusing on the technology. And we end up changing our whole design so that they were able to very quickly and easily assimilate the data and focus more on their interaction with the user so they can do that law enforcement piece. And that sort of understanding of, is there risks there beyond what the data was telling them, but also from what the environment and the setting and the context was telling them. So having that conversation with the users and understanding how they do their job is so critical to delivering the right technology. And we didn't have to make a major technology change. It was things that we had at our fingertips. It was just how we chose to implement them and what we chose to focus on. So I think it's just really important when we think about this is always through that mission lens, that user lens, or that business lens, because that's where we get that. And again, once we do that, if we do it right, the adoption actually ends up becoming pretty easy, and those folks become your champions throughout the rest of the organization to bring this technology in and get everyone else excited about it.
So Doug, I feel like we could go for a very long time, more than one podcast, on different kinds of technology, different customer challenges and problems, different program management approaches, different maybe data types, different OSI standards, different kinds of apps, all sorts of things. And with that in mind, question that we have for you is, what advice do you have for the market, for people who are setting out, trying to figure out their digital modernization strategies? What would you recommend?
It's all about mission. It is all about delivering value to whatever mission we're trying to accomplish. Again, whether that's helping treat patients in a VA hospital, or it's enabling the warfighter, it's, you know, enabling our law enforcement to make more accurate decisions quickly so that they can discern if someone's really a threat or if they are, you know, a citizen. It is about that mission, and we need to focus on that. And then I would say, you know, we need to spend more time thinking about, how do you leverage and solve problems? And in that, listening to your users. So I think those are the key concepts I would focus in on is the, you know, it's about the mission. So we only exist to deliver mission. IT doesn't exist for itself. We exist for the mission. It's about thinking about how do you solve problems in a different way, thinking about what's out there in the world that people have already solved a problem that I could bring in to solve this other problem that maybe people may not have connected that dot or made that leap. And then it's about really sort of bringing those pieces together and listening to what are the real demand curves and the needs so we can give them the art of the possible and make, you know, everyone's lives better.
I love that. And that concept of getting people to think more and then really empowering the mission and moving at the speed of mission so that technology is supporting that and not hindering that. I think those are really compelling components that have resonated with what you've said. So thank you so much. I've really enjoyed our conversation today. And thank you for your time.
Thanks, Bridget. I appreciate it. And thank you, Megan.
And thanks to our audience for listening to Mindset. If you enjoyed this episode, please share with your colleagues and visit Leidos.com/mindset. And if you are specifically interested in digital modernization, please visit Leidos.com/modernize.